Part 3. In this part, you will hear two segments from a radio program. After each segment, you will hear six questions about it. Before each segment begins, you will have time to preview the questions that are printed in the test booklet. You will hear each segment twice. Then you will hear the questions once. If you want to, you may take notes in your booklet as you listen. Mark your answers on the separate answer sheet, not in the test booklet. You should mark A, B, or C. Do you have any questions? Look at the questions. Then listen to the first segment. Now you will hear the first segment.
Today's biology program covers the subject of blood and its functions. Rob Karras, our expert on hematology, tells us more. With him is today's guest, Dr. Tara Evans.
The average adult has about 5 liters of blood coursing through their body, delivering essential nutrients and removing harmful waste. Blood transports oxygen from the lungs to body tissue and carbon dioxide from body tissue to the lungs. It transports nourishment from digestion and hormones from glands throughout the body. Disease-fighting substances are transported in the blood to the tissue, and waste is taken to the kidneys. Tara, can you explain the function of plasma to our listeners?
Of course. Approximately 55% of blood is plasma, a clear straw-colored liquid. The liquid plasma carries the solid cells and the platelets, which help blood to clot. Without blood platelets, we would bleed to death. When the human body loses a little bit of blood through a minor skin cut, the platelets cause the blood to clot so that the bleeding stops. Because new blood is always being made inside the bones, the body can replace the lost blood. However, when the human body loses a lot of blood through a major wound, the blood has to be replaced through a blood transfusion from another person. Tell us about blood types, Rob.
There are actually 4 different blood types. In addition, blood has rhesus factors, which make it even more unique. Blood received through a transfusion must match that of the recipient. In some ways, every person's blood is the same. But when analyzed under a microscope, distinct differences are visible. In the early 20th century, an Austrian scientist named Karl Landsteiner classified blood according to those differences, and he was awarded the Nobel Prize for his achievements. If the red blood cell had only A molecules on it, that blood was called type A. If the red blood cell had only B molecules on it, that blood was called type B. If the red blood cell had a mixture of both molecules, that blood was called type AB. If the red blood cell had neither molecule, that blood was called type O.
What happens if 2 different blood types are mixed together?
Well, the blood cells may begin to clump together in the blood vessels, causing a potentially fatal situation. Therefore, it is important that blood types be matched before blood transfusions take place. In an emergency, type O blood can be given because it is most likely to be accepted by all blood types. Why is this, Tara? And is there still a risk involved?
No, not really, because a person with type O blood is said to be a universal donor. However, this does not mean that they are able to accept any type of blood themselves. In fact, they can only accept type O. Only those with type AB blood are said to be universal receivers.
Now you will hear the segment again.
Today's biology program covers the subject of blood and its functions. Rob Karras, our expert on hematology, tells us more. With him is today's guest, Dr. Tara Evans.
The average adult has about 5 liters of blood coursing through their body, delivering essential nutrients and removing harmful waste. Blood transports oxygen from the lungs to body tissue and carbon dioxide from body tissue to the lungs. It transports nourishment from digestion and hormones from glands throughout the body. Disease-fighting substances are transported in the blood to the tissue, and waste is taken to the kidneys. Tara, can you explain the function of plasma to our listeners?
Of course. Approximately 55% of blood is plasma, a clear straw-colored liquid. The liquid plasma carries the solid cells and the platelets, which help blood to clot. Without blood platelets, we would bleed to death. When the human body loses a little bit of blood through a minor skin cut, the platelets cause the blood to clot so that the bleeding stops. Because new blood is always being made inside the bones, the body can replace the lost blood. However, when the human body loses a lot of blood through a major wound, the blood has to be replaced through a blood transfusion from another person. Tell us about blood types, Rob.
There are actually four different blood types. In addition, blood has rhesus factors, which make it even more unique. Blood received through a transfusion must match that of the recipient. In some ways, every person's blood is the same. But when analyzed under a microscope, distinct differences are visible. In the early 20th century, an Austrian scientist named Karl Landsteiner classified blood according to those differences, and he was awarded the Nobel Prize for his achievements. If the red blood cell had only A molecules on it, that blood was called type A. If the red blood cell had only B molecules on it, that blood was called type B. If the red blood cell had a mixture of both molecules, that blood was called type AB. If the red blood cell had neither molecule, that blood was called type O.
What happens if two different blood types are mixed together?
Well, the blood cells may begin to clump together in the blood vessels, causing a potentially fatal situation. Therefore, it is important that blood types be matched before blood transfusions take place. In an emergency, type O blood can be given because it is most likely to be accepted by all blood types. Why is this, Tara? And is there still a risk involved?
No, not really, because a person with type O blood is said to be a universal donor. However, this does not mean that they are able to accept any type of blood themselves. In fact, they can only accept type O. Only those with type AB blood are said to be universal receivers.
Number 39. According to Rob Karras, where is oxygen transported to? Number 40. What does Dr. Evans say about the role of the kidneys? Number 41. What does Dr. Evans say blood is mainly made up of? Number 42. According to Dr. Evans, where is blood produced? Number 43. Which blood type do Dr. Evans and Rob Karras say can be accepted by most people? Number 44. What is the main purpose of this report? Look at the questions, then listen to the second segment. Now you will hear the second segment.
Civilization rose not once, but time and again in different places at different times. Civilizations rose and fell, some lasting much longer than others. There were at least two great dark ages where civilization essentially disappeared from most of the world. The first was from approximately 1200 BC to 700 BC, and the second was from 400 AD to 900 AD. The two prerequisites for civilization were the human ability to organize and the production of food in large quantities. Large amounts of food made large populations possible, but only if they could be effectively organized. Jeff Davids, our resident historian, and his guest Roberta Hinks explain.
In the space of 5,000 years from 8,000 BC to 3,000 BC, the earliest settled villages grew into complete civilizations in the Middle East, Anatolia, Iran, India, Pakistan, and China. By 3500 BC, the Sumerians had achieved the first complete civilization. The major Sumerian city was Ur, situated on a lagoon in the Persian Gulf, where it supplemented its farming by operating as a trading post for both sea and river traffic. Among the important steps in the movement toward civilization were irrigation, the city-state, trade, metalworking, and writing. Roberta, tell us a little about the invention of writing.
Well, this took place in Mesopotamia just before the start of the Bronze Age in 3000 BC. The earliest alphabetic system appeared in the city of Ugarit in modern Syria around 1350 BC. Ugaritic, which has a 32-letter alphabet, is probably the ancestor of all later alphabetic scripts. Ugarit was an important trading center between Mesopotamia, Palestine, Anatolia, and the ports on the Levant leading to Greece and Egypt. Thus, international trade became a means for the dissemination of knowledge around the ancient world.
How important was trade back then?
Trade increased in importance after the first towns appeared. Within the town, the different specialists had to trade the results of their work for the things they needed. The increasing importance of specialization required a more sophisticated arrangement of bartering so the residents could trade the results of their labor for the necessities and luxuries they desired. Within towns, specialization and the prospect of profit increased the rate of technological improvement. Experts had an incentive to find ways to be more productive. Greater productivity either made them materially better off or allowed for greater leisure time. However, the greatness of a civilization was somewhat dependent on military prowess. Most of the important ancient civilizations were military powers at one time and spread their culture by conquest. Those cultures that did not develop a strong military force did not usually last long enough to have a significant impact on world events. A strong army ensured longevity and the opportunity to become great.
The great civilizations of antiquity were those that achieved a high level of culture and technological development. Greatness was also measured by influence over distance and over time. The Sumerian civilization, for example, was never particularly large, but the importance of the wheel and writing, for which they are credited, was enormous. The Greeks, more than any other ancient culture, had the greatest impact on the modern world. The greatest civilizations of all left a lasting legacy of architecture, literature, language, ideas, and technological innovations that influenced those that followed.
Now you will hear the segment again.
Civilization rose not once, but time and again in different places at different times. Civilizations rose and fell, some lasting much longer than others. There were at least two great dark ages where civilization essentially disappeared from most of the world. The first was from approximately 1200 BC to 700 BC, and the second was from 400 AD to 900 AD. The two prerequisites for civilization were the human ability to organize and the production of food in large quantities. Large amounts of food made large populations possible, but only if they could be effectively organized. Jeff Davids, our resident historian, and his guest Roberta Hinks explain.
In the space of 5,000 years from 8,000 BC to 3,000 BC, the earliest settled villages grew into complete civilizations in the Middle East, Anatolia, Iran, India, Pakistan, and China. By 3500 BC, the Sumerians had achieved the first complete civilization. The major Sumerian city was Ur, situated on a lagoon in the Persian Gulf, where it supplemented its farming by operating as a trading post for both sea and river traffic. Among the important steps in the movement toward civilization were irrigation, the city-state, trade, metalworking, and writing. Roberta, tell us a little about the invention of writing.
Well, this took place in Mesopotamia just before the start of the Bronze Age in 3000 BC. The earliest alphabetic system appeared in the city of Ugarit in modern Syria around 1350 BC. Ugaritic, which has a 32-letter alphabet, is probably the ancestor of all later alphabetic scripts. Ugarit was an important trading center between Mesopotamia, Palestine, Anatolia, and the ports on the Levant leading to Greece and Egypt. Thus, international trade became a means for the dissemination of knowledge around the ancient world.
How important was trade back then?
Trade increased in importance after the first towns appeared. Within the town, the different specialists had to trade the results of their work for the things they needed. The increasing importance of specialization required a more sophisticated arrangement of bartering so the residents could trade the results of their labor for the necessities and luxuries they desired. Within towns, specialization and the prospect of profit increased the rate of technological improvement. Experts had an incentive to find ways to be more productive. Greater productivity either made them materially better off or allowed for greater leisure time. However, the greatness of a civilization was somewhat dependent on military prowess. Most of the important ancient civilizations were military powers at one time and spread their culture by conquest. Those cultures that did not develop a strong military force did not usually last long enough to have a significant impact on world events. A strong army ensured longevity and the opportunity to become great.
The great civilizations of antiquity were those that achieved a high level of culture and technological development. Greatness was also measured by influence over distance and over time. The Sumerian civilization, for example, was never particularly large, but the importance of the wheel and writing, for which they are credited, was enormous. The Greeks, more than any other ancient culture, had the greatest impact on the modern world. The greatest civilizations of all left a lasting legacy of architecture, literature, language, ideas, and technological innovations that influenced those that followed.
Number 45. What does the first speaker say about the history of human civilization? Number 46. According to the first speaker, what is required for a civilization to arise? Number 47. Where does Roberta Hinks say writing was invented? Number 48. How does Roberta Hinks say knowledge was spread around the ancient world? Number 49. According to Roberta Hinks, why was military strength important for a civilization? Number 50. What does Jeff David say about the Sumerian civilization? End of the listening test.